I am so excited to be with you, Rabbi Adam. It's just you and me this week, thinking about what just happened this past year and how we got through it. Thanks for being here, and thanks for having been along for this whole journey.
Hinenu, here we are, right? We made it. It feels absolutely surreal to think that it's been a year since the first time we had one of these conversations, and I am so grateful to you, Raviv, for inviting me to come back to finish out the year together. This has been a wonderful highlight of my past year, a year that's been a little rough. It's
just
been
a little
wonderful to be in this ongoing conversation and to listen into the amazing conversations you've had with others.
It only makes sense that we finish this out together, you know, as we figure out what the future of the show could look like. I think we're going to take a little bit of a break, just to take a breather. As you know, Rabbi Adam, I'm in Omaha, Nebraska right now, sitting in a hotel room.
Capital of Jewish culture.
The capital of Torah study in the entire world.
I actually know the conservative rabbi in Omaha, Nebraska, and he's wonderful, and they have a very active Miller Introduction to Judaism class there. So I should not speak ill of Nebraska.
I actually, my friend, I believe, I'm trying to remember, I think it was my friend Julie, who I've mentioned on the show before, who I grew up with. I think she might also know the rabbi here who she offered to put me in touch with. So it sounds like all these these things are converging on the conservative rabbi in Omaha, Nebraska, and perhaps I have to go say hello.
You should do that.
They must have a Shabbat thing going on. Who knows? COVID now.
Shabbat is happening, whether COVID is a thing or not, but what exactly they're doing, I'm not so sure.
All right, I'll find out. I'll report back. To give us some context for this week, I want to spend time looking back at what we've done and what this year meant to us. And we're not going to do what we usually do, which is kind of ripping apart the Torah portion and thinking about what's in there. But I do want to make sure I understand exactly what is happening at this point in the Jewish year. You know, we have this episode, one of our first intro episodes, kind of set up the idea of Simchat Torah and what we were about to do. Now we get to look back. But we're at that same place in the Jewish calendar. What's happening in Torah reading if you were to be in Shul?
Yeah, so we are right in the middle of the Sukkot holiday, which in America, everywhere except for Israel, goes for 8 days. So there's always a Shabbat there in the middle of the holiday. And there's a special Torah reading for Sukkot that we'll have this weekend from the book of Exodus, actually. And then before we get to next Shabbat, we will have Simchat Torah. And Simchat Torah is the holiday where we read the last lines of the Torah, where we actually finish the final parsha. And then, as you know, immediately roll the scroll back to the beginning and start again with the first lines of Bereishit, of Genesis. This podcast may be taking a pause, but Torah study itself, rest assured, dear listeners, never takes a pause. Literally, there is not a breath between the end of Deuteronomy and the beginning again of Genesis, which says something about how indispensable Torah study is in our lives, that it's not like we can put the book down and walk away for a little while. We're always in it, whether we're podcasting about it or not.
That's in practice, it is actually read that way, where you read the last line and the first line in one breath?
Not in one breath, and there's usually a little bit of, if you only have one Torah scroll, then there's a whole lot of forearm
scrolling
to roll it back. There's a whole lot of scrolling that happens to get it back. Thankfully, most synagogues of a certain size have two scrolls, one set up at the end and one set up at the beginning, and you call the final aliyah, the person who comes up and reads the last parsha of the Torah, and they're given a special designation. They are called, well, traditionally it was Chatan Torah, the groom of the Torah, presuming that only men were being called up for Aliyot. So you could be today in most of the synagogues you or I go to, a Chatan Torah or a Kala Torah, I guess a bride of the Torah. That's the honor of the final reading. And then you roll back to the beginning and go to Genesis, and that person gets either Chatan or Kala Bereishit, the bride or groom of creation, which is just two of the coolest titles.
What a name.
Yeah, these are seriously cool titles the tradition gives. And then, of course, on Simchat Torah, in a normal time, you would have a mad, crazy dance party with the Torah. probably a little toned down still this year, but next year, come what may, we are going nuts with the Torah.
I do have great memories from Road of Shalom in Bridgeport, Connecticut, dancing through the streets with the Torah and the entire congregation at Simchat Torah. It's been a while, but I remember it fondly.
I can absolutely picture a little Raviv running through the streets. Dancing like a maniac with the Torah. It's a great image.
What's happening in these last few words? Like, how do we end the reading?
Yeah, so the last discussion we had together was about Ha'azinu, which is not actually the last parsha of the Torah, it's just the last one we read on a regular Shabbat. There is one final parsha called Vezot HaBracha, which is the final lines of the Torah describing Moses going up Mount Nebo, a mountain on the other side of the Jordan River, looking out over the Promised Land, which he is not fated to enter, and then dying there. And the last lines of the Torah are, so Moses, the servant of God, died there in the land of Moab at the command of God. God buried him in the land in the valley of Bet Peor, and no one knows his burial place to this day. Moses was 120 years old when he died. His eyes were undimmed and his vigor unabated, and the Israelites cried for Moses on the steps of Moab for 30 days. Never again did there arise in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom God singled out face to face for the various signs and wonders that God sent to him to display in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, and for all the great and mighty and awesome power that Moses displayed before all of Israel. And that's where the Torah ends. So it's a bit of a cliffhanger ending, right? Mm-hmm. The old leader dies, but the people are still on the other side of the Jordan River. They're still not yet in the Promised Land. Their journey is not completed. And that invites us to turn to book 6 of the Hebrew Bible, and then book 7 and book 8, and ultimately to the next 3,000 years of Jewish history. The Torah, I think we've been saying all along, is the beginning of a story. It's not the end of it. And the last lines of the Torah leaving open the narrative of the people and the need for continued motion, I think kind of hints at that. That says, this is only the end of our beginning.
And why doesn't the Torah include those 6, 7, 8? What are those books?
So the Torah isn't the entire Jewish Bible, right? The Hebrew Bible extends out to include the next book, Joshua, and the book after that, which is Judges, to tell the story of the first 1,000 years of Jewish history after the Exodus, going all the way up to the last book, which is the book of Daniel, written under Greek rule, literally 1,000 years later. It includes books like the book of Psalms, or the book of Job, or the book of Ecclesiastes, where we get to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. There's the Song of Songs, a frankly pretty erotic love poem that found its way into the Hebrew Bible because it was the favorite of one of the most important rabbis at the time that the Bible got canonized, Rabbi Akiva, who said, if all of the writings are holy, the Song of Songs is the holy of holies, and I won't have it that it not be included in the Bible. So there's a whole lot more in the Jewish scripture, but the first 5 books always carried a different status. They were the original revelation, the original source, the source of the 613 mitzvot that guide Jewish life, the foundation story of the people. I guess in the same way that, you know, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence are the first documents in the American canon. They're not hardly the last, but they still hold a certain cachet, a certain prestige, a certain mythic importance, because they're where the American story started. And this is where the Jewish story starts.
And considering that the further writings, we know to have come, like you said, some 1,000 years later, is there a different perspective or understanding of where they come from? Where there is, while we understand that people wrote the Torah down, there is kind of, you know, a belief that it came from God. Are these other books looked at it in any different kind of light?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So most traditionally, though the Torah never says this, most traditionally, the idea is that the Torah was authored by God, or at least scribed down by Moses based on God's dictation. Now, many more progressive Jews see the Torah as the product of human hands, but at least in the traditional understanding, these first five books come directly from the source, with a capital S. The rest of the books of the Tanakh are seen as of great importance, maybe divinely inspired, but are generally ascribed to individuals. The book of Isaiah was written by Isaiah. The book of Jeremiah was written by Jeremiah. The Song of Songs is traditionally ascribed to King Solomon. The Psalms are traditionally ascribed to King David. Now, King David didn't write the Psalms, and Solomon didn't write the Song of Songs either, but these are books that are understood traditionally to have come for sure from human hands, as opposed to the Torah, which always has that sense that this is actually revealed text, not just written text. I'm curious for you, Raviv, you know, as we're finishing this journey together and I've gotten to be part of these conversations and listen in on your journey, I'm wondering if you can just share some of the reflections that are going through your mind as you look back on what the Torah is for you and maybe how it's different for having been in these conversations over the course of this year.
Yeah, that's a really great question. And I mean, the truth is, I don't think I've properly taken the time to think about what just happened until this very moment. So you're listening to me think about it in real time. But I continue to be really grateful for what this journey has offered for me. And I call it a journey because it's really the first time, I keep saying this as an adult, that I've done this. So it's felt like a journey. And I hope to continue to do so. And it'll feel like less like a journey and more like a weekly practice. But I mean, what a crazy year we've had. You know, what a crazy time that this practice for me was born out of. And I think that besides feeling like, you know, I was been an entertainer for a long time and I just desperately needed an audience, I also needed to be grounded in something far greater than myself. And I don't even mean religion, right? I don't even mean God. I still am figuring out, and I think, and I'm so grateful to you for providing and allowing the space for me to say like that I'm still figuring out what that means and will perhaps forever. What is fascinating and grounding to me is engaging with a study that has existed for now thousands of years, and that we get to, I mean, this goes back to that first episode we did together, and now I'm just seeing how true that is, that we get to build upon the wisdom and the study that has been done for so many years before us and are invited to actively participate in it. That it's not just a matter of reading what the sages say, but we've now added our own voice to it, right? You can now go back, go to iTunes and hear what Rabbi Adam and what Fanny Bialik and all of these, and Rabbi Matt, you know, all these wonderful, studious, incredibly smart people have added their voice to, you know?
And you, by the way, Raviv.
Sure. I'm just here to ask some questions. But yeah, that feels very real and tangible. And I am grateful that Judaism allows and asks for that. It almost feels like it's begging for involvement. It's not just, you know, I think this is like, it's altered and built on my understanding of what it means to be Jewish. Because what I thought before, I think, was, you know, I am Jewish culturally, but I don't go to shul. And, you know, I'm traveling a lot, and so I haven't made Shabbos in a while. Like that, it's a place that I think a lot of people I know find themselves. But there's so many different ways to engage with this. And here we've made like a very 21st century version of building upon this tradition. And it feels, honestly, not to toot our own horn, but like just as important as any other person or voice that has been added to it, because it's about the engagement. You know, the whole trope of like, it's about the journey, not the destination. Like, that really feels very true here. I mean, wow, looking back on the conversations that we've had, I've been in contact and in conversation with like the smartest people I've probably ever talked to in my life. These conversations have taught me so much about not just Torah, but about the world around me and the work that is being done out in the world in a very real and meaningful way. And I'm just very aware of the fact that I would not have had these specific conversations without Torah study. You know, I think about people that I know that don't have religion in their life, and no part of me thinks that they are worse off for not having, like, I'm not like, you are a bad person because you don't have religion, and you are likely having wonderful conversations in your own lives. For me, my own path and the way that I was brought into these conversations is because of Torah and is because of engaging in this practice that is about like deep engagement and wrestling and questioning and adding to the conversation. And I feel empowered. That's a really empowering feeling, to feel like you are not just supposed to ask questions and it's okay not to know things, but study these books. Instead, it's, well, what do you think about it? And what do you see going on in the world around you? And that's a big invitation.
There are two schools of thought. One school that says that the older a commentary is, the more authoritative it is, because it's closest to Sinai, right? Mm. If you can look at a commentary from 1,000 years ago and a commentary from 2,000 years ago, then the 2,000-year-old commentary is closer to that original moment of revelation and is less likely to be corrupted by time, right? That's one approach. And then there's a second school that says commentary gets better the further along the timeline you go, because you have more giants to stand on their shoulders. That when Maimonides looked at Torah, he had the preceding 2,000 years, but he didn't have Maimonides. And he didn't have the Hasidic movement, and he didn't have Kabbalah, and he didn't have modern scholarship. He could only be in the place that he was in time. And we have this opportunity to look back over the last 3,000 years of this conversation. And what you've done so brilliantly, Raviv, and also big shout out to Evan Scott Nicholas, the producer of this, is to think about who are voices who may never have been part of the conversation of Torah study, who could be brought in. And just in the conversations we've had together, we talked together to a professor of dream studies. We talked together to a Black Lives Matter activist. We talked together to Mayim Bialik. We talked together, well, she's been doing Torah study a long time, but we talked together to all sorts of really fascinating and interesting and out-of-the-box kind of people. And I'm wondering if there were particular folks who stand out in your mind, particular conversations or particular insights that you've never heard before, or that stirred new thoughts for you over the course of this year?
Yeah, it's really hard to pick one. I had the thought that before we did this recording, I should go through and kind of reread all of the summaries of everyone that we've discussed and start to pick out a few favorites. And I realized I couldn't, because they were all, to me, it is a holistic thing. Like, it's hard to pick the one thing that has meant the most to me. Rather, speaking with somebody like Maharat Rory Pikernes, who is an Orthodox Jew, and from within that context speaks of the importance of doing the work that we're doing here on the show, the importance of bringing in voices, and that building out, not just internally, but like actually building outward and inviting new voices in, is just as important. And speaking to James a few weeks ago about the opera world, I'm in Omaha working on a Romeo and Juliet opera right now, and they're flipping the thing on its head, and the way that the opera was written was for a mezzo voice to sing the role of Romeo, which is a female voice. And so often it's written as a woman who dresses like a man and is supposed to be playing a man, but because it's written for a female voice, it's a, and we're having two females play the role as two females, and it's going to be a female love story. And in the opera world, that's actually kind of, that's not done a lot. And now we get to actually engage with the local community here and talk about bringing in people who might not necessarily feel welcome by this space. And you're expanding on what it means to make art in this moment. And so all of these conversations kind of build on that for me of if it's wisdom that we're trying to receive, right? If I want to learn how to engage with my community more, and one of the ways into that is Torah study, then it has to be a two-way street. And that's something I'm proud of that we've done on the show is engaging in that. Like we're going to base it in Torah, but we also get to build out the community of who gets to study Torah in a way. And I'm not saying that we're responsible for that. That work is being done out there. But that's an exciting thing to learn that work is happening. And that's not something I think I fully understood. What you were saying too about, you know, Maimonides didn't have Maimonides. Maimonides also wasn't here now. And that part of what Torah study has to offer is a way to engage in the world around you, which means it can't actually only be done by reading what sages said from thousands of years ago, right? There has to be, for me, if I'm going to feel more grounded in my life right now, there is definitely wisdom, right, that comes from people who wrote thousands of years ago and was closer to that moment of revelation. But that doesn't seem like enough to me. It feels that there has to be a current kernel of something to make it feel alive now, if that's what I'm trying to access.
Yeah. Makes me think about a conversation I had in my last Introduction to Judaism class just this past weekend. We were debriefing people's experience with Yom Kippur, and for many people, it was their first experience of a high holiday service. And somebody in the class said, you know, the rabbi gave a sermon, and it was really political, and I didn't agree with it, and you know, that bothered me. And I said, first of all, Mazel Tov, you are officially part of the Jewish community, and that you complain about the rabbi's sermon.
That's made me the first of many.
Exactly. That is a well-worn path, and you're now on it. So Mazel Tov. And second of all, you know, one of the things that makes Judaism interesting to me is that it's not something hermetically sealed off from the rest of life. Torah has something to say about how we eat. And it has something to say about the clothes we wear. And it has something to say about how we spend our time and how we spend our money and how we raise our kids and how we love our partners. And it has something to say about the big things that are going on in the world and the way that we talk about big things happening in the world in contemporary life is through the language of politics. So if we want Judaism to be small and we want Torah to be small and only concerned with a very narrow framework of topics, then we can certainly have that kind of Torah and we can rely on our ancestors to give us that Torah, but it's incomplete because it's taking something that is meant to be expansive and making it small. And so the more voices at the table, the bigger Torah is, and the more it deals with the contemporary issues, the more relevant Torah is, and the more it's in conversation with movements in art and culture, the more sacred Torah is. Torah doesn't benefit from being put on a shelf or walled off from the world. Torah benefits from being what it was always supposed to be, which is in conversation with the world. And I feel like that's what's been so beautifully modeled in this study, in this conversation, is the way in which Torah is seen as a living document with a lot to say, even about things that people might not expect religion would have much to say about.
The combination of gratitude and ritual practices can be deeply powerful and sacred. One Table invites you to bring those practices to your next Shabbat dinner. They're here to help you hold that magic of Shabbat while protecting each other. Even when you're alone, Shabbat is a built-in reminder to do something a little special for yourself. Plus, OneTable helps out with small financial gifts, so you can make sure it's extra special. Head to onetable.org to start.
We've been talking together in the language of what Torah study does for us, how it makes us more aware and more grounded and maybe more curious. Judaism tends to talk more in the language of responsibilities than anything else. I'm wondering if there's a way in which you feel like you've fulfilled some duty or some responsibility, either to yourself or to your family. Is there a way in which this has not just benefited you and our listeners, but in which this has been an act of service?
I do believe in the broad idea of mitzvot. I love the idea that doing a good deed is the thing that brings you closer to holiness. And Torah study is one of them. And I don't know how that tracks, you know. I don't know that I'm, when I one day perish and hopefully find myself at some pearly gates, that it's going to be, hey, you made this podcast. Great work. Come on in. You know, I don't think it's that. But, you know, I've gotten to read sermons that my grandfather gave in the 1950s. And that's brought me closer to him. Again, what that does for, like, the universe, I'm not so sure. But it feels, again, it's like where we started this conversation, it feels bigger than me. You know, and energetically in the world, as we try to heal from so much, and, you know, in Judaism, if it's tikkun olam, then thinking about these things and spending time putting my energy towards these thoughts feels worthwhile. And that feels bigger than me, right? It's not just like, oh, cool, I got to think about this great thing. Again, does that help, like, the homeless person on the street? No, not at all. But does it start to push energy in a certain direction? I think so. I mean, you've been at this longer than I. What do you think?
I think that studying Torah both gifts us immeasurable gifts, and I think it's part of what Jews do. What we do is we engage with this text, and it's what we've always done. And in that way, it is an act of service in that it continues a conversation that could very well end with us, but we instead choose to be a bridge for that. We add our piece to it, we lay down another layer, and then another generation can come and carry that conversation forward. And so I think that study makes my life better. I know that study makes my life better. And I also know that I have an obligation to play my small role in a bigger story, which is a story that Torah, at least for the skin I'm living in, plays a really big role.
And I think that you're right when you say there is a responsibility to keep it alive. It's a practice that I find great meaning in. It's a practice and a religion that I do want to pass down to a next generation, should I have the gift of being able to do so. And this was a way of keeping it alive. This is a way of keeping that alive by engaging with ourselves and inviting others to engage with it as well. Right, by adding to the conversation, inviting others to add to the conversation, that is the work of keeping it alive. And so that, I guess that's the part that does feel like I'm fulfilling a very Jewish responsibility of both engaging and keeping the conversation, like, really fanning the flames a bit.
There's a line in the Talmud that I love that says, what is a Torah of loving kindness? A Torah of loving kindness is Torah which is learned in order to be taught and shared. So there's the kind of study that one does to just fill up oneself, but that doesn't count as a Torah of chesed, as a Torah of loving kindness. It's only if we are filling ourselves in order to be able to share with others, not in a proselytizing sort of way, share with others, but share the best gleanings of the conversation with others, that becomes Torah as it's meant to be. That becomes Torah of loving kindness.
Loving kindness. What more could we wish for?
The world could use a whole lot more of it, and you are a wonderful source of that, my friend.
And you, my friend. Wow. I don't know what to say, and I usually end these episodes with saying, we'll see you next week, and that's just not going to be true for now. We are going to take, at the very least, a little break. But there's so much more to study. There's so much more to learn. I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to have learned with you over the course of this last year and all the incredible people you've introduced us to. And, as I continue my own study, and hopefully our listeners have found their own space in Torah study, I just hope that we all get to do this again soon. We did it with a great group of people. Like you said, Evan Scott Nicholas has been absolutely immeasurably helpful in this process and shaping it. Many of you don't know him. For those of you who do, you know how incredible he is. He was just married. Mazel tov, Ev.
Woohoo!
And my partner, Julia, who has been behind the scenes talking through every episode at length with me to figure out the best way to bring these stories to life, advising on who to invite into the conversations, and all of our friends who have been here, all of our listeners, our Patreon subscribers, anyone who has liked and reviewed, as I've asked you every single episode to do, thank you for doing so. I'm just really grateful for having spent this year together. And wishing you all a big old Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom. Till the next time.
Till the next time.